Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, do smart cars need smart roads? Driverless cars are all the buzz these days as autonomous vehicles are on the horizon and many are passing bills that allow for testing, and we've seen self-driving Ubers in Pittsburgh. But there's a big question. How are these cars going to communicate with each other, with the roads? How is real-time information going to be collected for cars to be making decisions? Well, my guest says that smart cars need smart roads, and he is Brent Skorup, research fellow at the Mercatus Center. Brent, thanks for joining the show.
Evan, thanks for having me.
So first, let's define our terms of art. What is a smart road?
Smart roads, I mean, it's kind of like smart cities in that people talk about it. It's not really clear once you drill down the details what it all means. But what I and most people when we talk about smart roads are essentially a mix of the infrastructure and the broadband and the fiber deployment and all the systems you need that will communicate with connected cars. I mean, the cars we have today that are getting more media and broadband capability, but also autonomous cars where, a big need for autonomous cars and at any level will be, you know, detailed mapping ability. And so that's what I mean by smart roads, just, roads and infrastructure that communicate with cars and other transportation and kind of ease a lot of the frictions people deal with. And I consider it a subset of smart cities as well.
Now, this is not something we have now, right? So when we hear about driverless cars in Pittsburgh and other testing going on around the country, if they don't currently have smart roads, how is this all working?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there are some schools of thought on this. I think right now, well, you've got multiple sides, and some people see, you know, all you'll need are the car units, you know, things that sit on top of a car, the radar, the LiDAR, the cameras, and you won't need any network. And then you've got the other side that says, you know, you absolutely need smart roads to give the precision, real-time information that cars need. Sometimes roadside units, you know, don't work well on bridges and snow in rain, and roadside units would be a complement, perhaps a necessary complement to what's going on to the systems that are on the car. And I probably fall more on that side. I think these will be needed in the future. LiDAR, radar, these other systems are great, but they don't solve every problem that we're going
to
have.
So let's talk about what those problems are. To the extent that the current technology is not there yet, and a lot of the discussion is around ethical choices that autonomous vehicles will have to make and obstructions that come into the road. Relatively recently, there was a death with a Tesla Autopilot. Now, I will make clear that Autopilot is not the same as autonomous vehicle, but there was a lot of controversy around it because the driver had Autopilot enabled, a white truck swerved in front of it, and the sensor could not pick that up. Is it stuff like that that you see as the benefit of smart roads, like you mentioned dogs running into the street or a speeding ambulance? I mean, are these the kind of unpredictable occurrences that you need a smart road for that a radar couldn't pick up?
Yeah, that's right. That sort of thing. And I laid some of this out, as you suggested, in a piece I wrote for Back Channel a few weeks ago. And, there's some information that is impossible or very difficult for LiDAR and radar to pick up. I mean, the unfortunate case of the Tesla driver, certainly more information about a truck come down the road from, say, roadside units might have, you know, prevented that sort of thing, because you've got another information source, perhaps a smart road network that is supplementing what's on the car computer system.
It might be very speculative to build a bunch of smart infrastructure in anticipation of it being used for autonomous vehicles, especially as there is this debate, as you mentioned, where there are some people who think that all the technology should just reside in the car. What other benefits to this smart infrastructure can you point to, particularly for government? Because if government's going to be spending taxpayer dollars putting in the conduit, fiber-ready infrastructure, if these are natural monopolies, the roads as they be, that wasn't English. I don't know what I just said. what other benefits are there? Why should a city councilman allocate funding, if not just for driving? Let's say that the LIDAR makes this obsolete. What else do you point to here as a benefit for cities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you suggest as part of the answer is that a lot of this is going in anyways. So fiber networks are going in, broadband infrastructure is going in. This is a bipartisan push. I mean, Hillary Clinton wanted, you know, big broadband upgrades. Donald Trump has said things about infrastructure upgrades and broadband will presumably be part of that.
Yeah, it's still unclear whether Donald Trump has broadband in mind for infrastructure, but a lot of people are pushing him in that direction, including some in Congress who say that if you're talking about infrastructure, we've got to be talking about high tech.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Congress, you know, will push for it. Certainly the carriers and the cable companies will push for it because it's good for them and their customers. So, and that's the great thing about this infrastructure is that it can be used for multiple purposes. So it could be smart roads, it could be smart cities, it could be consumer broadband, it could be wireless. And there's a lot of option value here, which is why I think it's important that this is a priority for the next administration and for Congress going forward. But they need to think of this application for smart roads, for smart cities, because that does affect construction. And I'll add, so the 2015 FAST Act, which was the big transportation bill that came through, for the first time listed what they call it, intelligent transportation systems, so infrastructure-based, basically smart roads. They made this an eligible, reimbursable costs for states and localities that receive federal funds. And so the FAST Act, and this is a $23 billion annual bucket of money. That's not all going to go for smart roads, I want to be clear, but it's an eligible reimbursable expense for cities and states who, you know, are asking, where do we get this money for this conduit and this fiber? And I think the FAST Act is a potential source of income or revenue for these new projects.
Now, we talked about how cities could benefit, you know, traffic studies, parking, you know, bus alerts, things like that. But what about commercial applications beyond just the autonomous vehicles? You mentioned storefront data gathering in your article and billboard monitoring. Can you elaborate a little bit on how this could be an opportunity for businesses beyond the obvious ones like wireless carriers, like broadband companies? Who else could benefit from this taxpayer expense?
Right. And so I suggested this in the piece. This was pretty speculative, but it generated a few comments from people who thought, you know, this was creepy. But I think we have to, you know, tolerate this and perhaps embrace it. When you have a new platform of any kind, you see advertisers come in, and certainly smart cities and smart roads, because they have sensor systems, they provide a lot of information about you know, where people are. And so one application, you know, I just speculated about was, you know, if we have these, you know, perhaps LIDAR systems that are watching the roads constantly and pushing updates to autonomous cars, you know, they could also, you know, count the number of pedestrians who pass a sidewalk on a given day, or the number of pedestrians with dogs or strollers. And certainly advertisers would have, you know, interest in this information. But that's how all media go. I mean, that's how broadcast TV went when advertised model. That's how the internet is run by advertising. It's the mother's milk of the internet. You know, without advertising, there is no commercial internet as we know it today. So I think this is something we have to look at. And certainly we need rules in place for, you know, how law enforcement, you know, collects this information. But again, it's speculative, and you know, people might be freaked out about it, but I think it is a likelihood as we go forward.
Yeah, and privacy is a sticking point in this debate for all over, whether it's does government use the smart infrastructure to spy on people, the autonomous vehicles, can they be hacked? Like, that's a whole can of worms that is going to be a major hurdle to adopting this technology. It's going to be a major point of argument.
Yeah, and I'll add, you know, these systems provide almost no new information that, let me put it this way, there's almost no new information going to be provided by these systems that isn't already collected by just existing networks.
Right. So even if that's just the existing technology in the current cars that have some internet connectivity and.
Right. I mean, current cars, but also, you know, 5G networks are coming out. These the next generation of wireless networks. And these are, you know, 5G. And this is all tied together with smart roads. I mean, 5G will likely be part of smart roads. But, you know, they're also a wireless, you know, wireless broadband for consumers in the home or on the go. You know, 5G, these are very dense networks. They provide a lot of information about just naturally where people are. And this is used today by law enforcement. I mean, I think, this is getting a little outside, you know, smart roads, but the point is smart roads don't provide that much more information than that will be provided anyways.
So pushing back on the privacy panic, this is not necessarily something that's currently a secret that all of a sudden is being revealed. It's just maybe more efficient. Now, there's obviously a technological challenge here. You mentioned 5G. We recently had Brett Swanson on the show talking about the challenges there and how it's a higher frequency, so you're going to need small cells. I assume you imagine that as part of this plan. But getting back to that debate, you know, between does this need to be roadside infrastructure? Should it be in the car? What is the downside to just making this each car is its own thing and they view the road a certain way and make decisions that way? Like, are there reasons not to attach a sensor to a car, or is there a reason why it's better to put it on the road?
You know, some downsides you can think of is, you know, LiDAR and radar, they're pretty good within a couple hundred meters of the car. They can see a couple hundred meters down the road. I mean, that's about your limit. You know, with connected vehicles who can talk to each other, talk to a network, then you can have more complex, you know, traffic prediction. You can see what's going on blocks or miles away. You know, cars can say there, you know, something danced across, you know, came across the street suddenly, and can tell cars, you know, that are two blocks back what happened. And this is probably going to happen. You know, today, I'm glad we're doing this today. There was actually so V2X, you know, this refers to vehicle to infrastructure, vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to pedestrian, vehicle to network. V2X is what I expect we're going to hear a lot more about. And again, it's a subset of the smart roads idea. Today, NHTSA, the traffic safety regulator, announced that they were going forward with their V2V technology rules that they proposed in 2014. And so this is a very relevant thing. This is already happening. I mean, NHTSA has planned for 15 years to have vehicles talking to each other. And so, you know, there's always a sense that cars will need to speak to each other and also will speak to networks, vehicle to network infrastructure, vehicle to infrastructure, like stoplights. So this is happening, and certainly, you know, car makers and tech companies will see they're going to use this information. It's just another source of information that can make cars safer and more predictable.
So one more concern around that whole idea that technology can improve, right? So maybe right now there are drawbacks to the radar on the car because of jarring or dangerous situations, but maybe it's expensive now, maybe it's getting less expensive. I mean, technology is constantly changing. And is there a danger in this infrastructure expense that you create this vast network of smart roads? It takes God knows how long. I mean, we talk about 5G being a massive deployment challenge. Each city and state and the federal government, they all have their own hurdles and barriers and regulatory nonsense. I mean, is there a danger that by the time all is said and done, the LiDAR's improved, vehicle to vehicle's improved, and this was all a waste? I mean, are you concerned about that? Is there validity to that argument?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a risk. I don't consider it that much of a risk because, as I pointed out, a lot of this infrastructure is going to come out regardless because of 5G,
right?
Because of smart cities, could be bus routes, it could be whatever. So a lot of this is coming out anyways. But I think, and this needs to be studied, but for, you know, a reasonable marginal cost, you could plan networks so that it is available for vehicle networks and the things that people have talked about for years. I mean, this is not a new idea. This is not unique to me, but people have long thought you know, cars will benefit from additional information down the road from other cars, and it won't just be self-contained in the car.
Well, will it cause people to be locked into a certain technology, right? I mean, even if there's that, even if you allayed the concern that the infrastructure will go to waste, right, because there's 5G and et cetera, but will this induce companies to work within the smart infrastructure, even if that's not the best plan, just because it's there? I mean, you don't want a situation where you lock people in to vehicle to infrastructure as the only way to go just because government decided to build the infrastructure, right? If down the line, 10 years, 20 years, whatever, technology changes, you don't want to be locked in. I mean, do you think there's a danger that because government signals a preference for vehicle to infrastructure by doing this proactive thing, digging up roads, putting in infrastructure, will that lock companies into something that's maybe not the best, or will they be able to just adapt to changing circumstances and take what they like from the infrastructure and leave what they don't like?
Yeah, I mean, that latter point that they all have flexibility to choose whether to use infrastructure or not. And there are security issues. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, people are concerned about. You know, I think it's overblown. I mean, like a lot of security issues are, but there are security issues whenever you connect to a network. And that was, I think, Google's concern. That's why they've, you know, been more on the side of, you know, all the intelligence will be in the car. So yeah, I think companies need flexibility. You know, regulators, I hope, will just define the outputs they want, you know, safety, collision avoidance, and leave the technology and the specific, you know, mechanisms to the private industry. And that's why I'm very concerned about the V2V rules that NHTSA announced today.
Yeah, which we've discussed on previous episodes with Mark Scribner from CEI.
Oh, have you? Yeah, great. Yeah. You know, this DSRC, Dedicated Short Range Communication System. So NHTSA is proposing to mandate this for all cars. This is a standard from the IEEE. And there's no way of knowing if this is the right standard. This is a very nascent technology. And frankly, I'm very concerned about the way they're going about this.
So that's the federal government, but this is also a big state issue. Are there states that are doing a good job of paving the way for smart roads, pun intended?
Yeah. I don't know if there's a statewide example, but there's an interesting experiment going on a proposal in Atlanta where in downtown Atlanta, the city has built out a municipal fiber network. They're providing electricity. They're providing access to poles and stoplights. And basically opening it up, they're soliciting tech companies right now to use all the infrastructure they've built and test out, driverless car capabilities. I think it's a very progressive take on autonomous vehicles. I don't want to get the municipal broadband debate, but allowing companies to come in, test their own technology on driverless cars. And iterate and experiment. I think it's a very good way of going about it. You know, there are some other examples that I think are unwise, where cities and states feel that they need to build the networks themselves, and so they're building these sensor systems. There's some in Michigan. There's some Department of Transportation tests in Wyoming, I believe, in California, where the governments are building the technology.
Than just making the roads ready for private providers to come in and build it themselves. Michigan's been getting a lot of positive news coverage around self-driving cars recently. Anything that you have to say about that? I mean, has Michigan taken an approach to smart roads worth discussing?
Michigan has this test going on where they do have a sensor system through a stretch of highway, and we'll see. I mean, these are very expensive units. They've chosen, I think, $4,000 to $5,000 a piece. To me, that shouldn't be on the taxpayers. I mean, cities don't typically do technology well. I don't think, leave that to the Silicon Valley experts who upgrade these things regularly and can push software updates and can change out the sensor systems as new technology comes available.
Yeah, and that gets to the concern about locking you in, right? If the government is the one building the technology, it's a lot harder to get the upgrades. Whereas if the private company does it, they have every incentive in theory to make the upgrade, and that's not going to be on the taxpayer.
Right. I mean, you talk about lock-in. I mean, certainly government you know, controlling, if not designing the technology is a problem. And I think of this as, you know, I studied the FCC primarily, not transportation policy. And we see through the history of the FCC, what I would call the AM broadcast model and the cellular model. And these are two very different models of technology, with AM and FM and TV broadcast. The FCC with help of industry would push to the industry, say, you have to use this spectrum and this technology and this business plan, and that's all you can use. And that's the way this DSRC thing is going, where they have a set spectrum band that they have to use, a set technology that they have to use. And that's a recipe for delay and slow growth. And it's not a recipe for innovation, certainly, as opposed to the cellular model, where FCC just releases spectrum, you know, sell spectrum. Companies can innovate, they can design chipsets and computers. We've had many generations of wireless standards in the last 20 years alone. You know, we're entering 5G, which is, you know, five generations of wireless technology. And there are others, you know, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So that, to me, is the model. You know, just leave all the intelligence to private companies and just, you know, open up these networks or the infrastructure, build the conduit, but leave all the intelligence to private companies.
Well, we'll leave it there. You've got a clear message for policymakers there. Leave the smart stuff to the smart stuff, or smart stuff to the smart folks, rather, and maybe stick to doing what you do well, which is dumb infrastructure that can be used by anyone. But that's it for today. My guest has been Brent Skorup, research fellow at the Mercatus Center. For more on this topic, you can read his article, which we link to in today's show notes. Brent, thanks for joining the show.
And thanks for having me.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media at techfreedom.org. Find this podcast on the iTunes store. Please leave us a review, because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.